This is Fantasy Football Friday with Ty Richardson.
Week two of the NFL season. I'm your host, Ty Richardson. Welcome in Sigmund Bloom, footballguys.com, fantasy football writer, also a co-owner. Sigmund, it's been a while, man. I think the last time we spoke was in Nashville. How are you doing?
Yeah, last time we spoke, I was in Austin. I'm in New Orleans now. Because I'm in New Orleans, I'm very good.
You seem to be in the right spot, man, going from Austin, Texas to New Orleans. You've been living high these last couple years.
Absolutely. And way too much is really the motto here. And, you know, it's certainly something, I feel like it's one of my life accomplishments that I've lived in New Orleans now.
What's your go-to spot down there, man?
Oh, wow. You know, the answer really just depends on what do you want? What are you looking for? Because there's so many specialties here. There's so many things only in New Orleans things here. And there's different spots, like you mentioned, all the way up from like the famous places. And the famous places in New Orleans deliver, you know, it's not tourist traps. There's a reason that they're so well known, that their name rings out far and wide. But there's also the most unlikely places in the middle of a neighborhood that you would barely even notice that will have the best version of something. Gas stations here have some of the best fried chicken. You know, this is just a place where you're rewarded by looking and listening. And, you know, I would say off the top of my head, I really like a neighborhood restaurant like Mandina's or Joey K's that has the best Creole and the best Italian. And really, whatever sounds good to you, it's going to be good there.
We did the Pat O'Brien's, the Hurricanes. We did the big ass beers. I didn't do the Cafe Du Monde, the beignets, but my friends did. I don't know if I could say that I've had New Orleans style gas station chicken, but there's some places, man, you go to, it's as good as it gets when you compare it to, you know, whether it's a fried food, just like a Popeyes or KFC, or just like a place that's known for fried chicken. Sometimes you find a hole in the wall gas station. It comes through for you.
Yeah, it's really a place where paying attention is rewarded, and people really enjoy all of the sense pleasures of life, you know, eating, drinking, dancing, allowing yourself to get caught up in the moment.
All right, so let's talk football, man. I know you're a Steelers guy. I do a show with a Pittsburgh native, actually, who was born and raised in Squirrel Hill, and he is a giant Steelers fan, and deservedly so. They didn't play well on Sunday night. That's an understatement. I'm not too worried about them. They got the Antonio Brown saga off their back. I know they don't have Le'Veon Bell. They're two best weapons in the last few years, but I think they're going to respond with Big Ben and company. What do you think about them this year, and do you think there's a lot of pressure on Mike Tomlin to really get it done in the AFC?
Well, you know, I'm neurotic. Most Steelers fans are neurotic, so I'm fearing the worst here. I feel like Ben Roethlisberger is clearly in the autumn, if not winter, of his career. The Steelers don't get any advantages from coaching. Honestly, between the offensive and defensive coordinators, they're at a disadvantage. These players are at a disadvantage compared to other teams where the coaching gives them an edge on their competition. They're set up, I don't say they're set up to fail, but they're certainly not set up to succeed. You've got a defense that is still prone to terrible lapses. You've got an offense that its identity has basically been Ben Roethlisberger, and he can't carry the offense now. This team might have to become a more boring James Conner, rely on the offensive line, and bend but don't break defense. And that's not going to cut it in 2019. And I think this team is headed for a stretch of years, losing years. I wonder what it'll take for them to move on from Mike Tomlin, because they've had three coaches in the last 50 years. So I'm bracing myself for something that's not fun. And I think if you have James Conner, if you have Juju Smith-Schuster, you know, you wonder if you have what you thought you had when you drafted them.
Tom Brady and the New England Patriots, with what he did to them at home in Foxborough on Sunday night, Collinsworth, Al Michaels, the American public are still blown away what is potentially, and a lot of people agree, that is the greatest quarterback of all time. So, Sigmund, I'm wondering, he went low in a lot of leagues. How much of a percentage do you give him to making it in the top four fantasy quarterbacks this year with all the weapons and his sustained success in the NFL?
Yeah, I don't know why you would go against him. I mean, it sounds like Antonio Brown is not going to go on the commissioner's exempt list. So when you have Brown and Gordon and Edelman, you know, offensive line needs to hold up, but I think that's only a limiting factor against defenses with good pass rushes. So this has never been a team that has let up on the opponent when they have advantages. The array of talent they can put out there reminds you of the Moss Welker Patriots. So, no, I think that if we were drafting today, he would easily be a top five or six quarterback. And you look at the schedule, I mean, this is what do we have coming up? You have the Jets. Buffalo's defense is tough. Washington, the Giants, the Jets again, Cleveland. I mean, the only heartbreak is they get Miami in week 17, so you miss out on that if you have Brady.
Another overreaction, I thought, from week one was Dak Prescott. Yes, he looked really, really good at home. It looked like Kellen Moore had a lot of good offensive schemes and sets for him. Do you think there was an overreaction when it comes to Dak Prescott's performance in week one?
Well, it's possible. Is it really just that the Giants' defense is that bad? And, you know, we were watching Jameis Winston scuffle through that game last night, and that's who he gets next week is the Giants. We watched Josh Allen look very poor against the Jets until C.J. Mosley went out. We'll see if he plays Monday night against Cleveland, and that's who he gets this week. So we may look at week one. So we watch these week one games, and we think, what was this really about? And we don't know yet. We need to see more data points. If the Giants defense is just that bad, now Dallas gets Washington this week, that's not exactly a test. They get Miami next week, that's not exactly a test either. You know, maybe we get to the New Orleans, Green Bay part of the schedule. Those are some games, and those are games against teams that are potential playoff teams in the NFC, so that's a good simulation. But look, the Cowboys are stuck with paying him $130 million for 4 years or whatever it's going to be. The alternative is, you know, unless they really want to say it's the offensive line and its surroundings. And Kellen Moore, that's another thing that we need to reframe. Is Kellen Moore giving this offense advantages that they didn't have before? But I would say that Prescott deserves to get paid. If you're just a competent to very good quarterback in the NFL, you're going to set the market no matter when you're up in the cycle.
So last night, Cam Newton didn't have his best performance, and he looked frustrated at periods during the game and his post-game presser. Sigmund, does he look like he even wants to play football anymore?
Right. You know, it's Andrew Luck. The ghost of Andrew Luck is looming in the room, right? Well, it's true. And you think about the punishment, and you start to project a few years ahead when you watch Deshaun Watson hobble on the field sometime, where teams that do an inadequate job of protecting these quarterbacks or otherwise subject them to this kind of punishment, does it take away some of their will to play? Or at the very least, does it take away an edge? That's the thing about Cam Newton. He looked like a hunter on the field. He looked like a player who was in an aggressive mindset, an attacking mindset, both as a runner and as a passer. I haven't seen that the first 2 weeks. I don't know how much of that's physical. I don't know how much of that's mental. I don't know how much that's schematic with Norm Turner, but if he can't throw deep and he can't threaten the defense as a runner, what exactly is Cam Newton at this point? It's certainly a story to watch.
So I bought into the Ronald Jones hype, hearing a couple beat reporters and a couple people telling me that he was going to get more carries. So I did this. I had Peyton Barber on my team, Sigmund, dropped him, pick up Ronald Jones. He has the performance he does last night. Not great. How do you go about picking up and dropping players on the same team when you hear different things for different beat writers and different fantasy writers throughout the week?
Trust your eyes. I mean, trust your eyes if you see on two levels. Which one is the better player? And we have to assume rational coaching. We have to assume the team will play the player that looks better to us, at least. Maybe we're the ones that are irrational. But also look for something that just otherwise is special or stands out. Whether it's the player or the scheme and execution of the offense that creates opportunities for production. And in Tampa Bay's case, I'm not seeing either of those. I still don't see a running game that's going to get us on track. Even though Ronald Jones' burst stood out last week, I don't know how many opportunities he's going to get to show that on a consistent basis with the lack of quality of this running game. But I think you move on from Tampa. And then in other situations, the answer might be both, all of the above. You know, you want a back from New England. You want Rex Burkhead or even Damian Harris, if we're talking about deep leagues, just to see what happens. You're looking at the quality of the backfield. So So even if we don't have clarity on who's going to play more, you know that it's a good offense. You know that these are players that could produce in that offense.
So another overreaction that a lot of people had in week one was Todd Gurley and his touches compared to, and forgive me, but what's his backup that had a stellar performance?
Malcolm Brown.
Okay, Malcolm.
Former Longhorn.
Yeah, so he has a better performance than Todd Gurley week one. People are freaking out who drafted Todd Gurley, and many drafted him in the first round. Yeah. So if they see that, it causes them to get a little vein in their head that just explodes. So what did you take away from their week one performance, and how do you think it's going to play out the rest of the season, man?
Yeah, this is interesting because Gurley looked like he had his typical burst and flexibility. You know, maybe not quite the same physical edge to his game, but all we can infer from Sean McVay's usage is that he wants to pace the usage so that he'll hold up through December and January, unlike last year. So I don't think there's any active ongoing problem with Gurley's knee, but I think that we just have to take at face value that if Sean McVay showed us he wants to save Gurley the punishment of goal line carries and inside carries in general, and he wants to save Gurley for the end of games with the game as a microcosm of the season and save Gurley for the end of the season, then why should it change? You know, we did see the Panthers run defense was not that good against them. And it eventually gave way a little bit against the Bucks. The Saints run defense did allow some carries, inside carries to Carlos Hyde last week. So that bodes well for Malcolm Brown, but just otherwise wasn't really a stiff defense against the Texans, but Gurley's more of a running back two or a flex, along with Malcolm Brown. Darrell Henderson is the guy who I'm wondering if, you know, when is he going to be included? Some talk there. He was going to be a Chris Thompson type player in this offense, like Thompson was for McVay in Washington. He is maybe the best speed back outside of the three. I want to see him get used more. This still looks like a good situation, but it's one that's going to be split going forward.
Sigmund, another guy that took a lot of punishment throughout his NFL career is Gronk. And I know he was on, pardon my take, I know he was on, it was either ABC or CBS, I'm forgetting the network affiliate. He estimated that he might have had 20 concussions. Do you believe him or do you think he's embellishing it just a little bit?
I believe him. I mean, if it stands for the proposition that there are a lot more injuries and a lot more severe injuries than what we hear about, then I believe him. I mean, I think that even in this concussion-conscious era, there's no way for football to be safe. It's an inherently violent game. It's always going to sacrifice the bodies of the players. And the intensity and speed that they play it at, which in great part causes these injuries, is what draws us to the game. You know, a football that isn't played at that razor's edge that allows injuries to happen, it's not really football that we're going to be that interested in as spectators. So I think that that's basically what we have, and there's a lot more concern for player safety, so you want to create a perception and certainly even reality of caring about safety and preserving player health, but it's an activity that is inherently unhealthy.
So, Sigmund, I was talking to Chris Harris about this last week. He's been doing fantasy football since 1998, and I know you've been, I think this is your 19th year, correct?
Something like that, yeah.
Back when you first started, did you ever think it would be this big? And kind of what propelled you to get involved with footballguys.com and eventually get into the business?
Honestly, what compelled me to get involved was sometimes at my job, I was much more interested, a lot of time, let's be fair, I was much more interested in analyzing things and running my fantasy teams than doing the job I was there to do. And I thought, why don't I try to make this my job? At the time, there was only a few people doing it, and it was a small little budding cottage, not really even industry. It was just more like a club. And I quit my job to try to become a full-time fantasy player and writer, in part because a friend of mine and I and others were hit by a drunk driver while we were pedestrians, and my friend died. And it really made me think, well, you can't wait for the red carpet to be rolled out to try to make your life something that you want it to be. So why not try now? And it just gave me the good luck of timing because it was just a lot of the earliest people in this industry that decided to try to do it that have now been kind of grandfathered into some sort of prominence or name. And, you know, as far as where, you know, now with sports gambling being opened up in the United States and gambling and fantasy, you know, never anybody wanted to use the word gambling. It was like gambling among friends, but it is gambling nonetheless. So I think that in these times, that those kinds of things are distractions, are hobbies. They are going to become industries. They are going to become more of the things that drive us than what used to be jobs and careers for people.
I never heard that story before, man. I know John Neighbors has known you. That's kind of how we started the connection back when I was up in Fayetteville and then talked a few times. But it's a pretty, what seems to be like a pivotal story in your life, and it altered it greatly. And it's weird how much certain elements in our life impact our job. And you think about, man, if this changes me, and it seems like it did that just for you.
And I set out to, I actually went to Syracuse University for broadcast journalism.
Okay.
Like, you know, you can't swing a dead cat in the sports media world without hitting a Syracuse grad. And I just wasn't that interested in broadcast journalism when I saw what it was made up of. But the winding road took me back, because sports media is democratic now. You know, when we were growing up, well, I don't know how old you are. I'm old. I'm at 44.
24. You know, so you got 20 years on me.
So when we were growing up, when I was growing up, you know, we didn't choose our sports media figures by listening to their podcast or going to their page or buying their subscription or whatever it is. We didn't really vote with our attention and our time. The networks or the newspapers would just kind of pick those people, and those were the people in those spots. And now you can really just put your voice out there. The barriers to entry have been broken down to, you can truly distribute your work to the world. And if it's good, people will find it and talk about it, and the word about it will grow. So it's an entirely different time in the sports media. And it absolutely, sports in general, draw in a certain kind of personality. You know, we joke about it sometimes. But I do think that we're headed towards the future now, since you're 24, where your life and your career is more about your personality. And if you're in this business, just how you connect with people, really. And it's going to be more about connecting with people than the megaphone that you're part of. And most of this, I think, is especially, you know, we're doing this podcast right now. I think podcasts have gotten big because the sound of another person's voice is a cure for loneliness. When someone's talking to you, like your mom and dad reading a bedtime story, this world is alienating, and I think makes people feel more isolated. And podcasts and talk make us feel closer to each other.
Sigmund, I'll close you out with this, and I think that's perfect to end this interview. I was listening to Colin Cowherd on Clay Travis's podcast, and he talked about when people allow him to be in their lives for that 8-minute drive or the 10 minutes or whatever it be, he puts every bit of effort into it. And I think that kind of illustrates what you're saying. It's like, We think of it as us allowing our own selves into people's lives, but on the turn, they're listening to us. Like, they are choosing to pick out minutes of their day or hour or however, whatever the work is. It's a podcast, an article, or whatever. And so it's personal. And I'm 24, and I have so much to learn. I have so much to learn at this age. And hopefully I'll get there someday where I really feel like I've accomplished something. When I ask people just about different advice, different opinions and stuff, they always tell me there's no singular way to get where you want to be. This is how I did. This is how I did. This is how I did.
Right.
So for you, Sigmund, for those who potentially might be interested in sports media somehow, they're listening to this podcast or just want to hear your story on the back, what's your biggest piece of advice for getting to where you want to be in this industry?
Well, and it really applies beyond sports media, to be honest. So, you know, further on down the road, I can say that what matters most is caring about it and putting yourself out there and being open to whatever the universe brings you back as an answer. If you put yourself out there, something is going to come back to you. It might not be exactly what you asked for, but a door will open. A golden thread will appear for you to follow, that bargain that you make with the world, where you give something, some part of yourself to the world that it wants, and in return for that, you get to live your life relatively peacefully because you provide that. And I think that putting yourself out there in something that reflects something you care about, something that matters to you, something you're passionate about, is what will draw people. Enthusiasm, positivity, these are things that will draw people to you. And then the path will open up, and it may lead to sports media. It may lead to something else. But what's attractive, what will cause something to grow on itself and for that path to open, it is that positivity, loving your work, having your work be the reward in and of itself in some ways, and not the end. But if you're thinking about that end and you're visualizing it and you're attempting to make it come into reality, you will get somewhere. But it requires some risk taking, and it requires, honestly, betting on yourself. Because if you're wrong, then what does it matter anyway? I mean, you'll just find out faster that maybe that your life has something else in store for you. So whether you want to be in sports media or be a chef or take photos of cats or whatever it is that makes you light up, that turns you on, I think that drawing people to that could be your future now. You may think you have a lot to learn, but it's good that you haven't learned that much yet, because it means you're not stuck in anything and you can be original and come up with something maybe that someone else hasn't yet.
I always enter conversations with you or some other guys immediately like, I have a lot more to learn than I have a lot more to say. And that's how I always try to approach these things, man. Appreciate it, Sigmund.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
Show. I'm getting that for show.
New fantasy football interviews every Friday on HitThatLine.com.